the woman in the fucking back of the SUV.
Yes.
The police vehicle.
Yes. And her husband.
And she died or whatever?
And he was quote unquote sleeping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something ain't clean in the milk in that one.
It ain't right.
I have to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, that was an interesting story.
It is.
Carly, I was so proud of you because you were so like objective about Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow. And I was like, I was debating putting like little like rolling eye emojis like all around you during this, you know, because I'm like, this is like Carly hates these people and she's being very like, just want to know what you guys think because I hope they rot.
I think everything is a load of BS. But I tried to keep my opinion out of it.
You did really good. You were just like,
thank you.
Just wondering what you
were. For the very first time, I was objective.
You were. Straight up evil. Leave the dog alone because the dog didn't do a damn thing, and now you're trying to feed him your bodily fluid.
Thou shalt kill all of your
animals. Everybody's had a dog, fish, a tampon, and the garbage. It ain't right.
The Bible pages you can pretend like you were a dog.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Straight Up Evil. My name is Jocelyn. I'm the brunette. We've got Katie. She's the redhead.
Hello.
And we have Carly. She's the blonde.
Hey.
Thank you so much for joining us. This has been in the news a lot recently. We're talking about the countless numbers of women and girls of the indigenous population, pretty specific to the United States, I would say, in this episode, in Canada, who go missing every year and are largely underreported and are often discouraged from reporting. So we thought we'd kind of tag team it here. Carly and I are going to go through a few stories of missing people and see if anyone has any information, give you the right spot to go and look if you have anything to say, you want to learn more about these cases. It's very important that we keep these stories out there. And then Katie will chime in as always, and we will go from there. So the first person that we're going to cover is a Canadian Indigenous woman who has a beautiful name. Her name is Rhonda Running Bird. She was 25 years old. It's such a beautiful name. She was 25 years old when she disappeared on March 26th of 1995 in the town of Swan Lake in Alberta. And at the time, Rhonda was on a hunting trip with her common-law husband. His name is Fred Legrell. And by all accounts, he was a very, very abusive partner. Rhonda's mother, Mavis, her name is Mavis Crowchild, her mother. His name is just beautiful, just really beautiful. It really makes you like, just ask your parents, like, I don't know. Why? I just feel like my name's kind of boring. You know what I'm saying? Like, could we have made it a little more like, it's just
awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, exactly. Her mother, whose name is Mavis Crowchild, said that Fred used to beat Rhonda regularly. Yeah. And even her mother knew that. And it got to the point that it was so bad that shortly before she disappeared, Rhonda was having to use a colostomy bag because of the injuries resulting from a beating from her husband.
Oh my God.
So we're talking about really traumatic, terrible abuse. So when she went missing, the family contacted the Alberta police and the RCMP, which is the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, to investigate her disappearance. And I really commend them for doing that, even going that far, because as we'll find out, it's very discouraged within a lot of tribal communities to even communicate with the police for a lot of reasons, because of they have discriminatory practices, mm-hmm. or they don't feel that they're treated properly.
Yeah.
They're not treated properly. They don't feel like they're the towns that are being policed, the areas that are being policed by these law enforcement agencies. Native American people and Native Canadian people do not feel like they are represented. So right. why, you know, the it's almost like the police aren't really for them. And that's a very common belief. So, yeah. But Mavis took that step and reported her daughter missing. And the RCMP concluded that there's not enough evidence to determine whether foul play was involved in her disappearance.
This happens so often, though.
So often.
May not be foul play. Like, it, come on.
So it has... our case has sat dormant for the last 25 years. She's never been heard from again. And her mother continues to advocate against the police finding, saying that she knows she was murdered by her husband. He had every reason in the world to do it. And he probably just abused her so badly to the point where there was no turning back, basically. And he had to, you know, whatever. Turn of events. I actually heard in Murder Squad like 2 weeks ago, I think, it was a mother of a victim, and she was talking about her daughter's killer, and she said, a lot of people say he just went too far. He just in that moment he just went too far, and that like infuriates her. And she's like, you know, going too far is a DWI. You know, going too far is not killing someone. Exactly. Yeah. So, I've been thinking about that a lot. But her mother still advocates on behalf of her daughter and maintains that Fred Legrell is the perpetrator. But again, Rhonda hasn't been seen since March 26th of 1995. Ugh. So if you have any information relating to the disappearance of Rhonda Running Bird, we will attach the appropriate information for the agency to contact to this episode.
Okay. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, where's husband at?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's just not
a lot of information. Yeah.
He's not being investigated.
Also another really frustrating part about this too, I think. And I think that we run into this a lot with the podcast a lot, is that we want to focus on the victim. We want to pay attention to the victim. We want to give homage to the victim. Right. But then we go to try to find these victims or their stories. I mean, it's even local. It's just local cases too. It's trying to just find information on these girls or even, well, girls really mostly, let's be real here. But yeah, it's like, I mean, it's just, that blows my mind. Like, you can't just find any information even on a local case, let alone this.
No, I know.
I mean, we have websites like the Doe Network and the Charlie Project that catalog missing persons, specific to the U.S. But Carly, I wanted to ask you: did you find a list of missing Indigenous women, a comprehensive cataloged list?
I didn't find like an entire list of like all the women missing in the United States. But I did read like a 20-30 page report about the epidemic that is the missing Indigenous women of the United States. And there were in there that I could probably get information from and put in the show notes.
Do you think that this is like with the national parks, how there's been a lot of controversy about how people go missing from national parks every year, and they don't want to do a comprehensive list because they don't want to discourage people from going to national parks, and they really don't want to report on it when it happens. Do you think this is similar, or do you think it's specific to Indigenous populations?
Yeah, because where's the relation in that? I feel like there's no relation in that.
I'm just saying that people who go missing from parks are largely not reported for a specific reason. And so I'm just wondering if you think there's a specific reason why there's no place you can go where there's a list of them.
I think, this is just my opinion, like there's no factual basis to this, but I think it's a mix of the fact that they're not necessarily always alerting the authorities, or alerting the like tribal police, the tribal agencies, but they're not necessarily alerting any other local authorities.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it seems that they're doing that because in the past they have not been searched properly enough, or they haven't been kept in the loop with communication, or they just haven't been doing a good enough job advocating for them. So like that's their choice, that's fine. I just don't think that necessarily like anyone has all the facts, like all the tribal agencies or the other law enforcement. And honestly, a lot of the time, from what I've gathered in my research, I don't know every case, but when the law enforcement agencies are told, they bungle it, or they don't care enough.
Yeah.
They just don't care enough. So it could be a mix of, it could be a mix of both of those things.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, so. It goes back to our main man, Paul Hulls. He always says law enforcement agencies all need separate types of training, right? So if you live in a community that has a large indigenous population, you need specific training to
in
know
that area.
It's just like any other job, you know, same thing with the military. Military police need specific types of training to deal with, you know, homicides and things that happen on the base.
It's hilarious that you brought him up too, because I was just going to bring him up too. Just in the fact that
everything points back to Paul.
Everything always goes back to Paul.
The
always.
North Star. He is the North Star.
Straight up, Straight Up Evil is his biggest fan. Straight up, But yeah, I was going to mention something briefly about that too. Just like also like look, for example, at how much credit he gave to the woman that helped solve the Golden State Killer, and all those years that she spent doing the research and doing all of this extra shit that, side note, like hint, hint, wink, wink, other people weren't fucking doing, okay?
Right.
That law enforcement wasn't fucking doing, but she was, and she was sending the shit right to the station, and you know, Paul like dedicated that whole thing to her for that, you know, and so it just fucking further proves like their lack of,
well, I'll get into it in my second story, because that played a big part in it.
Yeah,
a big part, badly.
This is playing a big part in a lot of our cases.
So Carly, who do you have next for us?
The first woman I'm doing is Kay Sarah Stops Pretty Places, which is again another beautiful name. I just love it. Kay Sarah Ruth Stops Pretty Places. She was an 18-year-old member of the Crow and Northern Cheyenne tribal community. She lived with her grandmother. This is in Montana. She enjoyed sports. She played basketball, football. She ran cross country. She also like performed in swing choir and some school plays. Like she wanted to be a performer. Like she was just like an all around, like well-rounded girl. She did all these like extracurriculars. They said that she liked to rescue stray animals, which like went right to my heart, obviously.
Right. Being of course. Your little vegan heart.
Exactly. Save all the animals. And so she turned 18 August 14th, 2019, and she went missing 10 days later. She was last seen August 24th in Hardin, Montana, which is like a small city. Only about 3,500 people live there. And it was a half a mile off of the Crow Reservation where she lived. Really little is known or reported on of her actions the day she went missing. We just know that she didn't come home that night and her family was concerned. And they ended up reporting her missing a few days later on August 27th. So they did alert the local police of Bighorn County. However, the local police station failed to take even very basic steps to conduct investigation into her disappearance. They didn't interview family members until after the missing person report was filed. They didn't issue an MEPA, which is a missing and endangered person advisory, which is basically, I was looking into that. I'm like, what does look like criteria for that? Like maybe it didn't meet the criteria. Basically, MEPA protocol, any circumstance of a disappearance that does not require, that does not equal an Amber Alert, which is for children, like we know. So like, as long as the person is missing and we think that they are, it's suspicious or unexplained, they're with someone who could be dangerous, or they have health concerns, or just the mere fact that it's an unexplained disappearance, like they should have absolutely put the MEP out. And they did not, for absolutely no reason whatsoever. Could not find a reason why they didn't do that. So 2 days later, after she was reported missing, August 29th, a passerby found Kisara's body in the backyard in Hardin, Montana. Again, half a mile away from the reservation where she lived. Like, just someone walking down the street happened to find her body. But police couldn't find anything. Couldn't find anything out. Ridiculous. So what happened was the passerby finds her body, alerts the authorities. The authorities take care of it, but they don't even tell the family members that they've gotten Kisara's body until September 11th, which is today, which is weird.
That is literally.
I couldn't find a reasoning for that delay of telling them for any reason. They just waited 12 days or whatever to tell that they found her body, which is, I think, really sad.
Yeah.
The circumstances surrounding her death are completely a mystery. Her family believes she was murdered and they advocate as such, but the local law enforcement isn't treating it as foul play in any way. It was classified as suspicious, but the autopsy couldn't find any cause of death. Like, there were certain causes of death that were ruled out, like injury or natural disease. The toxicology report came back inconclusive, but no definitive cause was found.
Wow.
So getting back to just how great the local police force cases.
Oh my God, we're gonna get letters, but I'm sorry. The last month,
awesome local PD is.
The last month of our episodes have just been like, fucking get it together.
Well, I mean, here's your
get it together, yeah.
Like, seriously, take it.
Jennifer Dulos, they did great. The wealthy white woman, they searched high and low. Anyone else? Maybe not a wealthy white woman, not doing so good.
Yeah.
So Kisara's family was like continually left out of the loop. They, after the police failed to conduct searches for Kisara, they failed to alert the media of her disappearance. So they didn't tell any media outlet whatsoever that she was missing. So no one knew to even look for her. And then they, you know, forgot to tell the family about the body even being found until 2 weeks later. They still just kept information from the family. Her grandmother, Dixie, agreed that they were not communicating well with the family. They had to gather most of the information from news and from like social media outlets. Like, the family should not be finding out the information from the news. That's my opinion. Like, that's really a terrible way to find out. The grandmother was quoted saying, "It makes me feel bad because she was treated like she was nothing, like her body was nothing."
Oh my God. Which is just awful.
So sad.
Fortunately, like we were talking about earlier, a lot of the time the victims' families are left with the burden of searching for their loved one or advocating for the search for their loved one. Hey, Sarah's family had to compile a list of witnesses to interview. They had to compile a list of ideas of evidence to look at. They wrote letters. They requested meetings. They made phone calls. They provided witness statements. All of this was given to the sheriff's department. And the sheriff's office didn't even respond with confirmation that they would or would not do simple things, such as look into her social media accounts or her phone.
Wow.
Wouldn't even they could do that. So time and time again, law enforcement failed to do anything to find Kisara or find out what happened to her after her body was found. She's among at least 27 Indigenous girls and women that were reported missing or murdered in Bighorn County in the past decade, with at least 134 cases in the state of Montana alone. So right now, as the investigation is still open, no arrests have been made and we have no information.
Of course not.
And that's
it's awful. Just
failure upon failure upon failure, really. And that poor person who just walked by and found her body in a backyard. That poor.
What is that? Did you see anywhere if it was like on a like visible from the road, like that she could have been taken like out of a car or something?
I couldn't find out like how much in the yard she was, you know, like, mm-hmm. what was the state, like I don't. Yeah, you're right though. She could have very well just been like dumped out of a car and then left, you know. Just sad.
Sketchy. Really, really sketchy. Yeah. I don't understand why. Maybe someone out there works in law enforcement and is not too angry enough to talk to us. If because of all the things that we've said over the last month about a couple different police departments that have disappointed us. But why do we err on the side of there's not enough information, and so we will not find that information? The allocation of resources, that's where I am like, what is the point where if you deem someone's death as suspicious, how does that not prompt an investigation?
Right.
How does that not, like, if it's deemed suspicious at all, that means that there's something worth looking into. That means mm-hmm. that there is, a not good reason why they're just dead or just lying or missing. Like, that means you need to investigate. That means something nefarious happened.
So tragic, too, that this happened right after she's not a juvenile.
Right.
10 exactly. days after she's legally of age. Like, so tragic that it happened at all, but so tragic that they couldn't.
Mm-hmm. That's giving me a feeling that it has something to do with someone who is close to her on the inside.
I was thinking, like it's way too close to her becoming legally an adult. Like, mm-hmm. but then also you could say, well, she was finally of age. She was finally able to just go off and be and do whatever she wanted and ended up tragic. You know, it could be either way. But my mind definitely went to like conspiracy theory there.
Yeah, I mean, I think most murders are committed by people that you know. Stranger abductions are rare. They happen, but they're rare. So yeah, I mean, somebody who knew where she was and who knew that she was far enough off of tribal land.
Right.
She was, yeah, gosh. So.
Like to only be half a mile off the reservation, like it's just enough. You know, it is just enough to not be where she, you know? Ugh,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, wow, that's really terrible.
Again, we'll put in the show notes like information if anyone has any information at all where to call.
Yeah. Yes, we definitely will. So before I get into my next and final missing Indigenous woman, I wanted to point out that the National Crime Information Center says that there was 5,712 cases of missing or murdered Indigenous women and girls in 2016. And 116 of those were in the Department of Justice database.
Wow.
So it's a percent of a percent, you know, it's a very tiny, tiny percentage that are actually, you know, affiliated with the Department of Justice and truly investigated, which is terrible. Right. In some of my less proud moments, I watch Murder in the Heartland sometimes late at night. And I watched a great episode with a tribal male who was murdered. And it took an extremely long time for even his wife, and they had a young child, to go to the police.
Really?
She articulated a real fear of talking to the police at all for any reason. and the way that it would be perceived by people that they knew
in,
that she was taught, like, exactly.
Jeremiah also just mentioned, brought up too, and mentioned that, and made a good point that there's also like certain, there's certain cultures that don't even allow police anywhere. Like there, it's like forbidden for to speak to them, to have them around, to anything. So like if they don't, and they don't, they have the right to tell them to leave, like, and that they don't have to speak to them. Like they can do that 100%.
Yeah. Right. So the second case I want to talk about is the case of Stella Evon. 17 years old, Stella Evon, she is an Indigenous woman. She was a member of the American Inuit tribe, and she lived in Bethel, Alaska.
Wow.
She disappeared on September 29th of 1996, which is 24 years ago. She had gone out with friends the night prior, and when she arrived home in the early hours of the morning, she was knocking on the door of her residence and her grandmother didn't wake up to let her in.
Oh.
She had the door locked and she's knocking and she doesn't wake up. So there was a police station right across the street from where Stella lived. And so she went there and was like, I can't get into my house. I don't know what to do. I need help. And so the police maintained that they drove her to her sister's studio apartment at about 4:30 in the morning and dropped her off there. Stella left her sister's apartment sometime between 5 a.m. and 6 a.m. that morning and has not been heard from since. So there is some evidence that she did make it to her sister's. Okay. But she, if she was there, she wasn't there for very long. She's still considered missing under suspicious circumstances and she has never been found. There is a reward in her case. There's a $5,000 reward from her family. If you could, if there's any information leading to her location or the location of her remains. Her family is actively trying to rekindle interest in her case as she was a minor. When she went missing. And so she was a missing juvenile. And they believe that she could still be in the local area. It's possible. Mm-hmm. Or in Anchorage, Alaska, they mentioned specifically.
Hmm. Do we know how close Anchorage
is to Bethel? I bet I could find out. I just always think of Israel Keys.
I know.
With Anchorage. Yeah, exactly. But
I also think of my friend Emily too.
397 miles away.
Okay.
I'm not sure if she had family there.
Right.
Or what. But yeah, interesting about American Inuit women is that they are three times more likely to be the victims of domestic violence. I read according to NPR. And so again, because reporting is largely discouraged. So yeah, it's tough. I think this is also why we decided to format this episode this way, is that there's just not a lot of information on a lot of these women. Because it generates very little interest. It's very, very sad.
It is really sad, and it's not right.
But Stella's family is actively trying to generate interest in her case now. So her name is Stella Evon. She was 17 years old when she went missing. If you look up her name, they have an age progression for how they think she would look now. Mm-hmm. And if you have any information, like we said, we'll get you to the right place to give that information.
Definitely. Or it's even worth a share. Like maybe I'll tweet about and we can share it and just get the information out there just to generate interest in the case. And all.
Are we also going to just make the whole list of all of the missing Indigenous women? Should we just start that too? Or
I mean, we probably should. Truly, if we have any listeners that know Montana or are in Montana and know about these, how many women did you say, Carly?
in Montana alone, in the past 10 years, it was 134 cases that we know of.
I mean, I would absolutely love to do more research and find out more about that. And you know, if you live in Alaska, we would love to hear more local stories about this and see how similar the issue is.
Also, can I come visit? Because I want to go to Alaska.
Oh my God. Love to.
My best friend Emily lives there. We can go anytime we want.
We got to go there.
I would love to go.
She's got a big house.
Love. So the next woman that I'm doing is actually, again, a murdered woman. We do end up eventually finding her body, but still, there's still nothing about the case. Information about the case, exactly. So it's still worth a mention because we need more information about what could have happened to her. So I'm doing Olivia Lone Bear. It's Olivia Carrie Lone Bear, and her tribal name was Cedar Woman. She was a 32-year-old mother of five when she went missing. It was October 2017, so pretty recently. She lived on the Fort Berthold Reservation in North Dakota, which is the home of the three affiliated tribes, which is the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara tribes. And I believe she was part of the Hidatsa tribe specifically. She was last seen October 25th, 2017, driving a 2011 Chevrolet Silverado 2500 truck. It's a truck. I don't know more about that, but she was in Newtown, North Dakota. It wasn't her truck. It was a truck that she frequently borrowed from a friend or someone. I don't know exactly who owned the truck, but she would be seen driving it pretty often.
Carly, I just can't even deal with you calling it a Chevrolet. It's a Chevy. Let me get in that Chevy. She was in her Chevrolet.
Chevrolet Silverado. It was a truck.
Gotcha.
So she was driving away from Sportsman Bar, where she would, you know, she went there pretty often. But it's unclear if she was alone when she left. We don't know if she had someone, you know, with her or not. According to her brother, Matthew Lone Bear, Olivia seemed to have stopped home that day after leaving the bar because her cell phone, her wallet, and money were later found there, along with clothes that she was seen to have worn that day. So she must have changed clothes. I mean, how many times can we say it?
No woman.
Wallet.
No
purse left behind.
Woman. Will
no
ever
left behind.
It doesn't happen.
No purse left behind. Getting the shirt. We're making t-shirts, everyone. We'll have it.
We really need to. Those pictures will sell like crazy.
Yes, absolutely.
No purse left behind. Seriously, it's fucking real life.
It's crazy. So she seemed to have went from the bar. She went home, changed her clothes, left her wallet and purse and money there and cell phone, and then we don't know what happened. So I read somewhere, like in an affidavit, allegedly Olivia texted a friend that she'd been to a bonfire and was going to go mudding for like off-road driving, which usually happens like near rivers or swamps, I guess, which she did, you know, fairly often. But no one who was investigated said that they went to a bonfire or went mudding with Olivia or have any idea about that. So we couldn't find the person who the text, you know, was texted to, so we don't know. She just never came home that day. She didn't respond to phone calls for 2 days. Olivia's family reports her missing. 9 months pass with no word or sign of Olivia and no information or of the truck that she was driving. So just absolutely no information. Her poor five children don't know what happened to her. Okay. So her family was really confused and concerned to what have happened to her. Her five children under the age of 14, she was their primary caregiver. Her family knew that she loved her kids and would not leave them. And I have in my notes, again, no mother will leave her children. If She's not going to leave the purse. She's definitely not going to leave her kids.
Well, unless you're like, unless you're like a crazy psycho bitch, like freaking, what's her name? That they just found her kids buried in a backyard or whatever. You know, unless you're like a mom unless who's detached.
There are Lori detached Wallow, mothers. Will not leave.
I don't think, I don't think any mom willingly leaves her kids. Mm-hmm. I feel like it, sometimes people find themselves in a situation where they, you know, you always hear about like the baby left on the steps of the fire station, you know, and you hear, like you hear those stories, and those women are not making that choice like happily. You know what I mean? Like it's a product of circumstance. Yeah, exactly. They cannot take care of their kids, and it's a horrible realization, you know. But get that right out of your mind. Get it right out of your mind. The next time that you hear about a missing mom, immediately you should be thinking, what happened there? That was not.
The red flag.
Yeah.
Red flag. So there is like a little bit of, like some people thought that there was a little theory that happened because Olivia, according to her brother Matthew, after her first child was born, she did lose her youngest child as an infant. He passed away tragically. And so she was really, you know, obviously very depressed, very sad mm-hmm. about that. It was an absolutely horrible time in her life. But she had went on to have 4 more children, and she no longer seemed depressed or under like obvious stress, according to her brother. So like, even though she still cared about it and she still like, you know, held that deep in her heart, it wasn't like she was still daily depressed and that she was going to possibly, you know, commit suicide or go off or something. So she was still very happy with her 5 children. You know, she loved cooking the meals. She got them ready for school. She played with them all the time. You know, it just, again, it's like solidifies that like something horrible must have happened to her if she's not mm-hmm. at home for all her children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So while the authorities across the state of North Dakota did assist in the search for Olivia, she entered her information into the criminal database to work with other law enforcement agencies. Leading the case to search for her, for the search for her, was the 3 affiliated tribes police department, or the TATPD. Matthew Lone Bear, her brother, and other members of her family felt that the tribal police were just not as helpful as they should have been, which is, you know, kind of different from what we were talking about earlier. It was the outside law enforcement that was kind of dropping the ball. And in mm-hmm. this case, they think that the TATPD could have done a better job because the outside agencies and like the individuals helping search for Olivia, they were doing one thing, and they were having to contact the TATPD, who were in charge of coordinating all those agencies. Mm. And for some reason, they would turn away a lot of people or agencies. They, for no reason, we don't know why. Like they just would turn them away and say like, no, we'll handle it, but they weren't handling it. So we come to find out that the investigators of the TATPD didn't even speak with Olivia's family until 5 weeks after she went missing. Wow. But they didn't even interview her family for over a month to find out information about why.
That's super odd.
Which is crazy.
We see this though, I guess, right? With the police department in Madeline McCann's case, in the Amanda Knox case. Yep. They do not want to give up that case. They do not yep. want to have another agency come in. Yep.
No, it's going to fuck everything all up. Yeah.
Like we said before, if the tribal police don't feel like, you know, that the outside agencies or law enforcement will help, maybe they'll just hinder, you know, the searches mm-hmm. because they know their people, they know, you know, their community, they're the best ones to handle it. But unfortunately, in this case, they didn't handle it. They weren't doing enough. So like, if they were gonna do it and do it right, that's fine.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yes.
But they didn't. So in fact, even though it was through the efforts of Olivia's family that her body would eventually be found. So 9 months after she was last seen, her family hired a private search group that used sonar in the body of water that was closest to them, which was Lake Sakakawea. I'm pretty sure I'm saying that correct. So they used sonar and they found the Chevy Silverado that Olivia had been driving that day.
What?
So yeah. Wait. So they found it.
They found the truck. It was July 31st, 2018. 9 months later, the private search group found the truck using sonar.
Where was it?
According to the TATPD, it was in the bottom of the lake. According to the TATPD, the lake had already been searched months prior, like a couple weeks after Olivia went missing, but they didn't find anything of significance. So
it came later.
That to me, like, red flag, that makes absolutely no sense. Why the police department, who has all of the resources that they can use, find anything. The family hires a private search group who used sonar and found her that day. Like, it took less than a day to find the truck. I don't know.
What do you think? Do you think she was there the whole time?
No.
According to what I read, she definitely had been there a while. We don't know how long exactly. So unfortunately, we just don't know.
Yeah, she could have been. This is like Gail with the torso, and they can't. It had been there for a while, so they just assumed, and then they finally test it. Carly, what happened?
My tripod just like released my phone, and it just went all over the place. Okay, and it's not going to hold it anymore. All right, so I'm just going to hold it myself.
Okay, cool. So we don't know. We don't know how long it's been there, but it's been there a while.
Right. So it's definitely been there a good amount of time. Unfortunately, that's the last answer that we get whatsoever. We find her body there in the truck. It was it was seatbelted into the passenger side of the truck.
No.
In my opinion, obviously murder. That it's murder in one way or another, whether she was dead before she was in the lake, whether she was dead in the, you know, or that she was unconscious and then she drowned, like, we don't know. But
she was definitely
100%. So
wow.
Though in fact the truck was 400 feet from the shore and it was 21 feet of water where they found it.
That's not that much.
It's not. It's not. So that just to me is another sign. Like that's.
That it was done.
Like, she was right there.
Yeah.
She was right there.
Wow.
Okay. In the truck. It's unreal.
Wow.
So unfortunately, her autopsy was inconclusive. There was no definitive traumatic, natural, or toxicological causes that could have been found for her death. So we have no reason for death. We have no cause. So we can only speculate like how the truck got there, how Olivia ended up there, and what happened to her. That's the end of it. We have no other answers. So sad. And her poor children have no idea what happened to their mother.
So that's awful.
That's Olivia Longbear.
Is her case open?
Her case is still open, yes. There have been no arrests. There have been, I guess there's been a few witnesses that have been interviewed, but we have no suspects. We have nothing.
So, wow.
Again, just absolutely nothing to go on. We have nothing, no answers. There's no justice whatsoever.
No, there isn't.
So. Those are my stories.
Bullshit. That's some damn bullshit right there.
It is.
I ain't about this life.
Bright spot at the end of this episode. Yeah. In the fall of 2019, President Trump did issue an executive order, and part of that executive order includes opening cold case offices nationwide. that will focus specifically on unsolved crimes involving Indigenous women.
That's good.
Well,
it's a huge
good job, Donald.
It's a huge win for that community, definitely, definitely. Sure. And we really wish them all of the best, and we will continue to look at these cases and monitor these cases, spread awareness about these cases, do more episodes just like this where we can talk about four or five or six women, because also, because there are so many.
Other people do that too. Like, shout out to other people that do crime. Like, let's do more Indigenous people, more Indigenous women.
Wait. Don't do crimes to Indigenous women.
All right.
You mean podcasts. You mean podcasts. Okay.
Yes, you know what I meant. It didn't come out right.
Oh my God, Quinny is so funny.
Hilarious.
All right. Oh, fuck. Nope. Lost it.
Nope. Okay.
Okay, Quinnies. Love you.
Love you.
Bye.
See you next week. Okay, bye.